I want to tell y'all a story about the musk deer. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a musk deer, because they're mostly in Asia, but musk deers, instead of having antlers kind of in the back of their head for protection, have these large, toothy fangs. They look like a saber-toothed tiger, actually. And there's a story about the musk deer, but you can see how their jaw looks. It's quite a formidable weapon, too. Now, in the field, what happens is the musk deer eats grass. It doesn't eat any mammal or meat form. But sometimes the musk deers would talk. And when they would talk, they would say something, and they'd talk. But one time, they smelt something that was absolutely amazing. It was the greatest smell that they had ever smelled. And they said to themselves, you know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to go looking for this smell because it's so incredible. So what they did was they began looking for it, and they went to the fields. Even young musk deer heard about trying to find the smell. And they went to the fields, and they looked for the smell in the fields. And then they looked for it in the steppes of the Himalayas. They began going there looking for it, trying to find it, because they couldn't get it anywhere. They went and jumped over fields of flowers to try to find the scent, because the scent was so powerful and so wonderful. They remembered, and they had to find it. They just had to. They went by streams and rocks. They went between trees and looked for it because they had to see, they had to find. Sometimes they even went into the winter way up in the mountains, and they found that there was snow, and it was harder to find it in the snow because everything was covered, but they had to look. But finally they got tired of looking. They got tired of looking for the special smell. And they laid down to rest. And when they laid down to rest, the long, toothy fangs that they have, their tusks, slightly pierced the side of their body. And the smell that they were looking for came from these sacks of musk that lied in their own abdomen. And when they pierced the skin, and they smelt it, they realized that the smell they were looking for had always been inside them, all the time. All the time. Now, Ramakrishna was a great Hindu teacher. Ramakrishna said, the fabled deer musk searches the world over for the source of the scent, which comes from itself. And you can draw. You know, sometimes it's nice to do a sermon in two parts because you get to do stories as well, and stories can be part of the sermon. So I'm going to ask you to keep that idea about the musk deer in your mind when I tell you the story. So what happens is this is our laundry room. It's really tiny, you see? It's got a laundry on the side here, and then in the next scene, you see how close it is to the toilet. Right? So if you open the door to the washing machine, you kind of can't stand between them. You can't do two things at once in this room. So my wife, who's not here, so I can say all sorts of things. Joan went out to a place like Costco. I don't know if you have a Costco-type place here. You probably do. You know, I don't know what they're called. And she bought the extra-high concentrated washing detergent for our washing machine, and in a container that looked just like this. Now, we came back from the summer, and we had all sorts of laundry, and we had all sorts of people staying with us. There was a pile, honest to goodness, outside the room, at least this high of laundry. You've probably all been there, had that kind of, you had a moment, right? So she put the laundry detergent from our big container into the washing machine, and then she left, and you know, she went out for the day, and I was pretty busy as well and such. What we didn't know is that the washing machine rattled, you know, like, and what happened is this thing rattled. It was full, you know, and it rattled to the side, you know, and then it kind of got caught between the two of them like this, and then it fell on the ground like that, and full, it actually broke in the corner here. And all of this laundry detergent kind of coated the entire floor. The entire amount of this, I don't know, it's 2 gallons or something. You know. So what happened is that Joan came in, and she's a good person, and she went in there and she said, oh God, you know, she almost slipped, you know, because it was so slippery. You know, so she got some towels and she mopped it up, and then she said the very famous thing that maybe we've all said at one time or other in our lives, we need to get behind the washing machine to clean up all the soap that went there. But the we didn't mean we really did it, did it? And me, you know. And so what I did was I pulled this washing machine out, which bumped into the toilet, which you saw earlier, you know, and then the door, which is right behind me, kind of had to be closed, so the room was really hot. And then I got a mop, because that was the only thing that I could get, and what I did was I pirouetted between the washer and the dryer now, like this, mopping up the, like, the soap. And then I realized I couldn't even have a bucket in the room because I had to kind of swing around like this and put the bucket in. And by the time I rinsed off the mop once, what was happening was the bucket was full of soap and it was impossible to rinse it out. So I had to go to the sink. So I went to the sink and I rinsed it out in the sink, and then I would pirouette over the kind of like the washing machine like that. And what happens when we're in a place we don't want to be?
Everything goes wrong.
Right, inside ourselves, especially, John. Like, what happens is that I began to blame Joan. It didn't take long, right? We're in a place, you're hot, you're sticky, you're unhappy, it's like, why did she buy that big container? What was wrong with her? Couldn't she understand that something like this could happen? And then because I've done meditation for long enough, I realized how lame that was, and I kind of walked it back, and I began again. But it didn't take too long to get to the point where I was going to blame the company that makes that kind of stuff. Like, what kind of idiots are they to make something that big, you know? I bet you they're spoiling the environment too, you know, I bet you that wasn't a green thing, you know, and then I walked that back, you know, walked it back to the idea of beginning again. And then boredom came to mind. Oh, this is just so boring. Oh, God, how can what's next? And I walked it back. I have to begin again. And then the next two were the particularly hardest ones, and maybe you've felt them too. The first one was, this isn't fair. I didn't dump it. I didn't shake it loose. I didn't break it. It's just not fair. And I walked that back a little bit. And I began again. And the last one was pretty much the hardest one, I realized. Because the last one was, why does this happen to me? It's feeling like, it's somehow I'm broken. And I had to walk that back to begin again. Now, beginning again is a pretty important spiritual skill. In Buddhism, they call it beginner's mind. In Hinduism, it's the science of mind. In Sufism, it's one step at a time. In Judaism, it's the path of the ancestors, one way going on. Beginning again is what we have to do when someone insults us, and we have to go back and walk it back, and we have to say, you know, you hurt my feelings. Beginning again is the kind of thing that we have to do when we say, I am so sorry I hurt your feelings. Beginning again has to be the thing that we do when we've had it, when we've just had it, and yet the job's not done. Whatever the job is. And we have to go back and begin again. This is not only a silly thing that happens to us when we're mopping soap in a bathroom. It happens to us every day that we have to begin again. And so when that last piece in the washroom mopping the soap happened, and I said, I'm not any victim here. Something happened, and I bet it's happened to many of you. I realized that I still had the health to be able to mop that soap up. And I had a house and a warmth and a washing machine that would allow me to clean all the laundry that we had. And I had the presence of mind even to be able to say that I could be happy even mopping up soap. And something in my body began to delight me. And you know it because you've all felt it, at least with grief. When grief comes into you and begins to basically rip your heart out, it's a physical sensation. There is a wonderful physical sensation in our lives, too. You know, after all of the premonitions of our internal dialogue, I was standing there and feeling wonderful. Wonderful. It was like there was delight inside my body. It was a body feeling, not a thought. And we need this body feeling. They talk about it in every world religion. The spirit, the grace, the chi, the prana, the kundalini. They talk about it in every one. And we are programmed for it. We are wired for these feelings. We're wired for understanding what grief is. We're wired to understand what passion is. We're wired to understand what delight is. But we have to find a way to quiet the internal dialogue in our mind so we can experience this. Sitting in meditation isn't the goal. That's the tool. So that when you're mopping the soap in your house, or when you're having to go up to the person that just insulted the pants off you, you know, and you've got to basically work with them, that you can begin again. That you can begin again. That's why in this culture, in our world, where people seem to have forgotten the whole idea of what it means to begin again and to work until the work is done and to plan so that the planning will in some way augment our future. This becomes not only a personal endeavor, but a social action initiative to be able to begin again. I respectfully ask you to begin again and know that, like the musk deer, the thing that we look most eagerly for is already inside.